I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. If it weren't for romance novels, the publishing industry would be struggling. These books are a very profitable part of the business with a loyal and passionate fan base who devour these stories and then are ready for more. It's become a diverse genre that now includes romantic stories featuring suspense, the supernatural, erotica, time travel. I even read about Amish romance novels called Bonnet Rippers. What they have in common is a couple who eventually falls in love and lives happily ever after. Well, since it's Valentine's Day, we invited two best-selling romance novelists to join us and a librarian. Joining us here in our Philadelphia studios is Dina Halick, and she's head of the fiction department at the Central Branch of the Free Library of Philadelphia. She's the librarian in the crowd. And Dina, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. Also with us and joining us by telephone is Grace Burroughs, writes romance and historical fiction set in 19th century England and Scotland. Her newest book is The McGregor's Lady, that is the fourth novel in the McGregor series. And Grace Burroughs, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Wonderful to be here.
And also with us is Mariah Stewart, and she's author of 26 novels and three novellas featuring contemporary romance novel stories. And her newest book is called At the River's Edge, part of the Chesapeake Diaries series. And Mariah Stewart, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Oh, thank you, Marty. Thanks for having me. And happy Valentine's Day.
Yes, same to everybody here. And it is one of the reasons that we are doing the show today. Dina, if I can start with you, what's the biggest misconception about romance novels?
I think that they're just, they're not on the same level as any other genre, that there's something less about them. And I think that could be nothing further from the truth than that.
What do you think, Grace, is the greatest misconception?
Well, I could second that vote and add that probably there's a misconception that they're easy to write.
As someone who has written romance novels, and we will get back to that. Mariah, what are your thoughts?
Amen to both of those comments. I think the perception is that they are fluff, that anybody can write them in a weekend. I've heard so many people say, well, I'm going to write one of those one day when I have a little time. It's not quite that easy.
Is that because, Dina, we're talking about what's referred to as chick lit, which is often, you know, looked down upon?
I think it's because it's aimed generally at women and women's interests and women's fiction. That is never really seen as literary as some of the other stuff.
Grace, how long have you been writing romance novels?
About 7 years.
And what got you started?
Well, it's funny you should ask. It was that impulse. I bet I could write one of these because I've been reading them for 30 or 40 years. It's my, I was a passionate reader and I'm a fairly articulate person. I love words. How hard could it be? It was really hard.
What was so hard about it? And I want to hear from you as well, Mariah, but what was so hard for you, Grace?
A romance, if it's done properly, is a complicated piece of literature. You have not one hero, you have two, a hero and a heroine. They must both have character arcs. They must both have dramatic arcs. The relationship itself is another form of main character. That, too, must have an arc. You've got to have all the pacing of a thriller. You've got to have a bad guy or some sort of protagonist. It's hard to pull off. And, oh, by the way, you've got to do it in 100,000 words or less. So it's a challenge.
It is. Mariah, how about for you? How did you get started? And you've written something like 26 of these novels.
Actually, it's 34, and I've just started number 35.
Wow. So what got you started?
I've always been writing little stories for myself from the time I was 7 years old. And that just, it just sort of grew from there. And the first book that I wrote, I didn't realize was a romance. There was a love story, but I didn't realize it was a romance. I don't think in terms of genre, because I read across the board and a story is something either that I either like or I don't like. But I will reiterate what Grace just said. There's so much more complications when you're trying to write the story, two people's lives coming together. And, you know, no one lives in a vacuum, so there are friends and there are family and there are other relationships that these two people are dealing with at the same time they're trying to deal with each other. So it's a lot more complicated than one might think.
Well, let me get a librarian response. Do you agree with what they've been saying about how the difficulty of writing a romance novel?
I think yes, definitely. Having never written one, but sitting around with a group of friends going, one day we're going to write one of these, and then that day never happening because we all went, nah, maybe that might be harder than we thought it was going to be. Yes, you're not just following one hero all the way through. It's not just one story, and it's not just the two stories because in a lot of them now, when you have connected series, you're also building the secondary characters to kind of lead them towards another book that they might star in. So you have to really be aware of the entire universe and know that that will eventually feature. So there's a lot of stuff there that you've got to keep your hands on.
And Grace, does there always have to be a happily ever after? Eventually?
That is considered one of the defining promises that a romance author makes to their reader. We will, in some fashion, create an ending that works for the two characters. The whole world may not come right, you know, that there may still be a war on somewhere, but the two characters get at least a good promise of a hopeful future.
And when you start one of your books, do you know how it's going to end, Grace?
I know, of course, that I will keep that promise to the reader, that these two characters will somehow come out okay and together. But, no, I'm very much in the grip of an ever-widening darkness when I plot my books.
Ever-widening darkness because it's so hard?
Well, and because I don't know what these characters would get up to. Sometimes I will start a book because I got a good opening line. I can hear the hero saying the opening line in my head, and that's all I know. Uh-oh.
And then you have to take it from there. Maria, I'm curious about the relationship that you have with your readers. Mariah?
The readers are it.
Yeah.
Mariah, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I get so much wonderful feedback from my readers. I get inspiration from them. And a lot of times I'll get an email that suggests something that I hadn't thought of. I tend to write in series because I like connected books. I like to see a world continue, to see my people moving within that world. And the series that I'm writing now, the Chesapeake Diaries, this is the At the River's Edge is actually number 8 in that series. So that's a lot to balance. But I'll get emails from people who will suggest stories or stories about different people within the community that I've created. And I enjoy that. I appreciate that.
Dina, is there a first romance novel? I mean, one that sort of marks the beginning of what we're talking about here?
Of modern romance or
yes.
A series of modern romance?
Modern romance.
Oh, my goodness. I think everybody has their own. The genre kind of changed in the 70s from the doctor nurse ones that were so hugely popular, and it became what we consider now the bodice rippers, which were the huge tomes that were like Dynasty in a book, which had everyone doing everything with everybody else. There was a little bit of confusion about, does rape mean love? No, it doesn't. But that lasted for about 10 years or so, and then things started branching out. But I think for me, I would say the book that made me realize, oh my God, this is amazing, was Laura Kinsale's Flowers from the Storm, which was, oh my goodness, I'm showing my age. This was like late 80s, early 90s probably. And that's the book that I will give people. It's like, you haven't read a romance? Try this one.
Because it's a good one?
It's a fantastic book, and it became... What I liked is when things started changing and it wasn't just the woman in need of rescuing all the time. And all of a sudden, she started having agency on her own. And to me, that's really where the modern romance really starts, is where you start having two equal people as opposed to a hero coming in and rescuing her all the time.
I'm curious about you, Grace, in that you set your stories in, 19th century England and Scotland. What's the appeal for you?
I think since Georgette Heyer was writing early in the previous century, Regency England has been sort of a taproot for romance. There's a large and loyal readership there, and it's what I grew up reading. I took a frolic and detour into Victorian Scotland, in part because Jennifer Ashley has written a phenomenal series for her Mackenzies. that was set in Victorian Scotland. And I just, I got pulled in, started researching, started traveling, and figured I want to play too. So I believe I'll be spending a fair amount of time there.
Well, and you get to do the costumes and the castles and all the things that come with 19th century England and Scotland.
Right, and the whiskey.
And the whiskey, and the whiskey as well. For you, Mariah, your recent series is set in the Chesapeake area. How come that? Is that an area that you know?
Yes, and love.
And love. Mm-hmm. And with a series, as you say, you get to sort of like, I guess, like binge watching in a way, the series that we enjoy on television. You get to continue the story from one book to the next.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Each of the books in this series begins and ends with a diary entry written by a woman in town who's in her 70s. And she knows everybody in town. She knows everything that's going on. And you see some of the events and the characters through her eyes because there's diary entries throughout the book. But it all ties together very nicely in the end. So,
and is that based on someone you know?
No.
and why? I know Mariah Stewart, that's not your real name, and Grace Burroughs, that's not your real name either. Why the alias, Mariah?
Well, when I first started writing and I was first about to be published, I had the option to take a pen name. And I kind of went back and forth with that. And then I saw the movie Misery.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, with my luck, I lived in a very small town at the time. I thought, with my luck, someday I will open my back door and somebody like Kathy Bates will be standing there with a baseball bat because she didn't like something I wrote.
Or an axe.
And
even
I had
worse.
Little kids. Yeah, I had little kids then. I thought, I just would prefer not to even have to think about that.
So your neighbors don't know who you really are?
Sure they do.
They
yeah,
do.
My neighbors do.
Okay.
I mean, my friends do, my neighbors, my but family. Not- but it's, you know, sometimes it's just better off to keep your business separate from your personal business. So,
how about for you, Grace?
There are two reasons in addition to that sort of privacy security reason. The first is you want your name on the cover as large as it can possibly be. So you want to be Anne Rice or Bella Andre. You do not want to be Bartholomew Aloysius whoever.
Right, too many words, so too many letters.
Right. The other thing is I wanted to be shelved with authors that I thought I would appeal to the same readership. Mary Balog, Joanna Bourne, there's some folks lurking in the B section that are just phenomenal writers. So I wanted to take advantage of that, of the B neighborhood on the shelves.
How very crafty of you. We're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation. We're talking about romance novels. They are big sellers, very popular. Two of our guests write them, Grace Burroughs and Mariah Stewart, and also with us, Dina Halick from the Free Library of Philadelphia. And we want to hear from you. We want to know what you like to read. 1-888-477-9499. Give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Friends Schools of Bucks County are committed to challenging minds and nurturing spirits to prepare students for life. Providing independent education from preschool through 12th grade, the Friends Schools of Bucks County include United Friends, Newtown Friends, Buckingham Friends, and the George School. Guided by Quaker values, these schools provide a core curriculum while fostering exploration, self-discipline, creativity, and a desire to learn. United Friends, Newtown Friends, Buckingham Friends, and the George School support WHYY.
I'm Marty Moscoen. They don't call it the winter membership drive for nothing here at WHYY. We've had to contend with snow, sleet, freezing rain, and what seems like everything else that Mother Nature has thrown at us over the last week or so. We know that has made your life more difficult. And frankly, it's made it even harder for us to raise the money that we need to raise to pay for the programs that you hear on WHYY. But it's never too late to be a member. Take just a few minutes right now and make that pledge of support. $5, $10, $20 a month, you decide. And then pick up the phone and call 1-888-345-9499. And you can pledge online at our secure server at whyy.org. We will end this drive when we hear from 8,400 callers. We will make it one call at a time. Be the next person who becomes a member of WHYY, 1-888-345-9499, whyy.org. Thanks. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we're talking about the popularity of romance novels and how they are evolving and have evolved. Dina Halick heads the fiction department at the Free Library of Philadelphia at the Central Branch. Grace Burroughs writes romance and historical fiction. Her newest book is The McGregor's Lady, part of her McGregor's series. And Mariah Stewart writes contemporary romance novels. At the River's Edge is the newest installment of her Chesapeake Diaries series. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We want to know if you read these books, and if you do, what you like about them. Let me ask you, Dina, because we were talking about it before the, going on the air, about 50 Shades of Grey, whether that really sort of opened up romance novels, or did it reveal something that had been happening all along?
I think it's... What happened with 50 Shades of Grey is pretty much what happened with Harry Potter when it hit big. That stuff had been around for years and years and years, but that one book just kind of hit the zeitgeist at the right time. And that's what happened with 50 Shades of Grey. Erotica has been around since the beginning of the genre, you know, kind of pushed aside, kind of hidden in the shadows. And then 50 Shades came along, and all of a sudden it's this brand new invention. But it's not really. It just pulled it out into the light. And it became this huge thing that people are discovering for the first time. And because they're discovering it for the first time, it's new and it's exciting. And so it really boosted the erotica genre or subgenre of romance.
So do you think we'll see, I mean, I know there's a movie that's going to be made, but do you think we'll, I know, we'll see more of this, or it's more out in the open now?
I think what happened is right after 50 Shades, you got all the copycats. I don't want to say copycats because these are people who've been writing it for a while, but the ones who kind of said, aha, now I can put this in a library. Now we can put this on the store shelves and the housewives will pick it up and not feel guilty about it. And the covers changed. So all of a sudden the covers aren't that explicit anymore. So it's safer to pick it up. And I think we saw a mini boom right after 50 Shades, and it's kind of settled down a bit and it's really plateaued again higher than it was before. So it's definitely more in the mainstream now, and I don't think it's going to go back, but it's settled, I think, into its new groove.
Well, Grace, I'm curious about how you, as a writer, how you write about seduction and romance and maybe even sex in some of your stories, your novels.
There is a misconception that a hot scene is about the biology. And in a romance, the hot scene is about intimacy. It's about characters coming face to face with parts of themselves that they haven't paid enough attention to. And as long as that is the agenda for the scene, the revelation, the self-revelation, the intimacy, the biology is sort of secondary. And the readers have reinforced my sense that this is what those scenes are about.
That's interesting. How about for you, Mariah?
I don't know that I could possibly top that answer. That was terrific. And absolutely. The issue, I think, is intimacy more than gratification.
Yeah, go ahead, Dina.
As a reader, someone who doesn't write it, I would say that the biology is the least of it. I find that there's only so many ways you can write about the actual act. And if it gets too samey-samey, I end up just skipping it because it's not, you know, it happened, but it's not relevant to the forward momentum of the story. But the intimacy part and the reasons leading up to it and the characterization, that's what gets me. So far more important than just the actual act.
Let me get, looks like Arlene from Lansdale to join us on Radio Times. Arlene, go ahead. You're on the air.
Taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
It feeds very well with the last comment that your writers have said. I've attended various workshops, writing workshops, and people have commented that people who write romance novels use a formula for these novels. And actually, I worked at bookstores as a salesperson, and I see in some of the sections there were huge amounts of romance novels written by one person. So I wonder if you comment about whether there is a formula that is used by romance writers.
Fair enough. Arlene, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Mariah, let me put that to you first.
I can't say that there's a formula. I've never adhered to one myself, and I'm sure Grace has not either. But as we touched on earlier, there is the promise that you make to the reader that there will be a happy ending. If that's considered formulaic, then so be it. But I don't think that there's, at least I'm not, if there's a formula, let me put it this way, I'm not aware of what it is.
How about for you, Grace?
Well, I think every variety of genre fiction has certain defining characteristics. There will be a dead body in a whodunit, but that doesn't mean they are written to a formula. So I would also take issue with that characterization. They'll understand where it's coming from.
Yeah, and I'd be curious about your thoughts, Dana.
I think that it really, like, if you're looking at a category romance, you know, the little ones that come out that you buy on the grocery store shelves, I know that there's probably stricter guidelines about those just because that's what the publisher wants, and that's what they're basically selling the marketing package more than they're selling the story. But when you've got standalone authors like Mariah and like Grace, and even in some of these categories, they go off in crazy directions. You're like, wow, how did you ever get away with that? But it's because they can do what they want as long as we get our happy ending at the end, or at least our happily for now.
Well, and there is a relationship here, Mariah. I mean, eventually this couple is going to come together and have this happily ever after ending. I'm just curious about how you think about the heroes and the heroines in your stories, Mariah.
How I think about them?
Yes.
I mean, their how do
relationship.
I make them up?
Yeah, well, how you see their relationship. And perhaps the part of the relationship where there has to be some kind of tension that they have to overcome in order to come together.
Well, I think every book needs a little bit of conflict. And I think that in a romance, that's where the conflict usually arises, is between the hero and the heroine and how they overcome the conflict to get together and to remain together is part of it. But I don't know. I don't think in terms of a formula so much. I'm still pondering that. I think there is that expectation that every romance novel has, but it's everybody gets to that in a different way.
Well, to you, Grace, I'm looking at your books about Andrew. I mean, you have a series where it looks like it's about a man. He's the featured character.
He is a book in a series that we have positioned as The Lonely Lords.
Right.
So hence the cover art was going to focus on a man. And it's a cover design that was very easy to replicate 10, 12, 15 times over. However, what my romance novels are about, and I suspect most authors are, you have an individual who has a defining trauma, they have an unhealed wound, and they have built all of their coping mechanisms around managing that pain. They may not even be aware of it. Into their life walks a person who challenges them and encourages them to develop the skills and the courage to deal with that pain, and to deal with it constructively so that they can grow into the better person they're supposed to be. And you have this dynamic going in both directions so that, yes, there's sexual attraction and there's humor and there's snappy repartee, but what's really going on is two people are encouraging one another to grow.
Mm.
That's the romance.
Is that why you read them, Dina?
I'm a sucker for a happy ending.
Well, who isn't?
I know. I love the fantasy of it. I like, you know, the world is not easy sometimes, and it's nice picking up a book where you know at the end things are going to turn out okay. In that case, it's no different than a mystery where you know that the crime is going to be solved at the end. So you have that, it's like a security blanket. You have that confidence that at the end, everything will be fine. And I think that's one of the reasons I read it, because I really like, I don't want to be all angsty at the end. I'm fine being angsty in the middle, but I want to know things are going to be okay at the end.
Nothing wrong with that. And that's Dina Halick. She heads the fiction department at the Free Library of Philadelphia at the Central Branch. Also with us, Mariah Stewart writes contemporary romance novels, At the River's Edge, the newest installment of her Chesapeake Diaries series. And Grace Burroughs writes romance and historical fiction. Her newest book is The McGregor's Lady, part of her McGregor series. And we are talking talking about romance novels on Radio Times today. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Grace, how important is the cover of your novels?
This is a significant debate in the industry. There are independent authors who are publishing their own works who will switch out the cover. They'll put a cover up for a week, see how sales go, and then they'll put another cover up and another cover up on the theory that if they put the right cover on that book, sales will take off. And for some of them, this has proven to be the case. So I think there is an argument to be made that the cover art is really important.
Well, I'm looking at one of the covers of your book, Lady Sophie's Christmas Wish, and we have a woman in a beautiful dress sort of in profile. It looks like she has a fan, and the torso, not the face, half of the face of a man and the torso of a man sort of leaning into her. Did you pick that design, Grace?
No, I did not.
Do you like it?
I am older. I'm in my mid-50s. I have an insecurity, I would say, about depicting the male as nothing but a set of pecs and abs. If you know, I wouldn't want my daughter reduced to body parts. And women know what it is to be objectified. And so for the hero to be portrayed not as a smile, not as a compelling pair of eyes, not as gentle hands, he's nothing but his core body strength. I'm not sure that's flattering to anybody, but the conviction is that sells books.
Well, Dina, I mean, this guy's turned into a sex object here, yes?
Pretty much. I think this whole torso without a head thing has been going on with women for a while on the covers of these books. It's only in the last year or so that it's happened really with a lot of regularity with the men. And I'm going to guess, and nobody has officially told me this, that it's because when you don't have the face there, if you're looking at that, you can put whoever's face on there you want. So if you want the guy to look one way in your imagination, that's okay. Because you've got the body and you can, like, mix and match faces in your imagination.
Well, that actually makes a lot of sense to me. How about for you, Mariah?
My cover set, I've never really had the couple type covers on my books. In this particular series, they started out using, I don't want to say landscapes, but it's like buildings, like stores or whatever within the community. If you look at the covers on some of them, you'll see, like, scenes from this little town. And two books ago, my publisher decided she didn't really care for those so much. So she started doing the type of cover that you probably are looking at now with the man and the woman just sort of like together, but you don't see their faces. But nobody's undressed. And there's nobody's pecs are showing. But Grace, I did love your answer, by the way.
Yeah, I actually think
that was wonderful.
Did those covers, did they end up selling more books? Do you know?
Well, this book is the first one that has come out with that type of, with that newer look. They're sort of like pastel-y and gentle. And my books are more gentle. Even though I dealt with spousal abuse and murder and infidelity, depression. My books are a little more gentle in tone. So I think they were trying to convey that. So this and the cover for the next book, which comes out in July, it is more of that soft romance-y, women's fiction-y look.
Do romance novelists, do you feel like you're part of a community? You Grace, you and Mariah, do you feel like you're a community of writers?
Absolutely.
Grace?
Some of my best friends are writers.
Grace, is that true for you as well?
Emphatically. I am a courtroom attorney, and I went to my first writers conference expecting writers to behave like attorneys. Oh, boy. No, I could not find a more supportive, generous, open-hearted, abundance-oriented community of people. It's marvelous.
Well, let me get, it looks like Phyllis from Burlington to join us. Phyllis, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi.
Hi there.
I was in my, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed. Go ahead.
Okay. I was in my car driving and I stopped because I wanted to bring up again the issue of formula and expectations. I know that the two writers have said that they don't think they write according to formula. I do some critical work on this, and I do believe, listening to them talk about their narrative, that that actually is formulaic in terms of expectations. You got to get to the happy ending. How you do it, there's a great deal of flexibility there, but I think part of what readers want is to see a certain narrative structure that gets them to the ending, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And Grace, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I would agree. If you don't provide that ending, then woe betide me as a romance author.
You'll hear from your readers?
Oh, you'll hear from the sales department. You know, if you are shelved as romance, that is the one guarantee the reader can take to the bank. That is what they are paying for. And if you deceive them and don't make good on that promise, you better have a really, really good reason.
Do you want to add to that, Mariah?
I think the term formula and the term expectation are not exactly the same, but I understand what the caller is saying. But as I think Dina brought up earlier, when you pick up a mystery, your expectation is that that mystery is going to be solved. The bad guy is going to get his, and the good guy is going to ride off into the sunset with a happy smile on his face. And you can't breach that expectation. But I don't think I've ever heard anybody refer to mystery genre as formulaic, and I'm not sure why that is.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, do you think it's because we're talking about women writers here, Dina?
I hate to say that, but I think it is. I really do think that anything, especially historically in publishing, anything that is geared towards a female market is put on a different level. And even though romance is the largest selling segment of the market, there is that thought that it's not important and it's not as significant as any other genre out there. And so people use words like formulaic, and they use that to kind of diminish it a little bit, because if you look at any literature, I would say 90% of it is formulaic if you use that as kind of how we're discussing it. Science fiction and fantasy is formulaic. Mystery is formulaic. Horror is formulaic. Women's fiction also is a genre that I'm not comfortable with saying women's fiction sometimes.
Right.
Literary fiction at times is formulaic. I mean, how many dysfunctional family novels have we read? That has to be a formula.
Untold list. Yes, yes, it goes on forever.
So yeah, it's. I think that yes, it is a function of mainly, you know, majority women are writing this for a majority woman audience, and there are social expectations and cultural expectations that go along with that.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about romance novels in this hour of Radio Times. That's Dina Halick. Again, she heads the fiction department at the Central Branch of the Free Library of Philadelphia. Mariah Stewart writes romance novels at the River's Edge, the newest installment to her Chesapeake Diaries series. And Grace Burroughs' newest book is The McGregor's Lady, part of her McGregor series. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Widener University. Widener University offers over 60 graduate degree programs, including physical therapy, which combines classwork with hands-on learning in one of the nation's first student-led pro bono physical therapy clinics. Widener University is hosting a graduate open house on March 11th from 5 to 7 p.m. That's March 11th from 5 to 7 p.m. Registration is available now at widener.edu/leadership. That's widener.edu/leadership. Widener Leadership Works.
I'm Marty Moscoane. If you're looking for a good reason to be a supporter of WHYY, how about a birthday present for Terry Gross, for Dave Davies, and for me? We all celebrate our birthdays today, which is kind of corny when you think about it. Pick up the phone and give not just us, but everyone in the listening area a present with a pledge to ensure the future of WHYY. What's that worth to you? $5, $10, $20 a month? Make a call right now at 1-888-345-9499. You can pledge online at WHYY.org. Today, in honor of Valentine's Day, we're talking on Radio Times about the popularity of romance novels, and we're exploring the reasons for the increasing number of single people in the United States. We're interested in many things on Radio Times, and we figure you are too. That's what you hear 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. We keep you informed. Make a pledge, 1-888-345-9499. Thanks very much. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We are talking about romance novels. They are big sellers. In fact, they account for something like $1.4 billion in sales each year and voraciously consumed by readers. Talking with Grace Burroughs and Mariah Stewart, who write romance novels, and with Dina Halick, who loves them and is also works at the Free Library of Philadelphia. We want to hear from you. We want to know about the kinds of stories that you enjoy. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. I ran across this. I'm going to put this first to you, Dean. I ran across this as I was doing some homework yesterday. It's almost 10 years old and is written by a guy named Dave Pollard. I don't even know who he is, but he says some very interesting things about romance novels. And he's one of the things he says is romances are in fact subversive literature. They encourage women to be dissatisfied with inequality and to set higher expectations for themselves. And they show them ways to achieve those expectations largely by taming men and in a way usurping their power. Romances are arguably the only art form of any kind that portrays women as equal partners with men. Do you agree with that, Dina?
I do agree with that. I think that one of the great things and subversive things about romance novels is that it is the only genre of literature where you are guaranteed, unless it's a gay romance, that the woman is the main character. It is, you know, and the woman is going to be the protagonist. She's the good guy. And it's the only literature where it is more important for the woman to be happy at the end. It's not a successful romance if the woman ends up in an unhappy marriage or with someone who's bad to her. So, yes, it's you read these things and everyone thinks, oh, you're just waiting for your prince to come. But no, it's teaching you that you should go and try to find happiness on your own. And that's something that girls have not been taught for the longest time, that we're supposed to wait to find the right guy. And this is, yes, you think on the surface this is about the right guy, but it's no, it's about you going out and getting your own happiness.
Is that how you see it, Grace, when you look at this, the books you've written?
I would, yes, piggyback on Dina's comments in that I hope a romance is not written so that a woman is happy by disempowering a man. You know, that's a win-lose. I should hope that a romance models the concept that we are happy when we take responsibility for ourselves, when we do our own work, and my goodness, doesn't true love just happen to walk in the door when you do that?
Mariah, you want to add to that?
Well said, ladies. I think the only thing I can add to that is that when you read a book about a woman who is searching and eventually discovering her own place in the world, where she's taking control of her life and getting to where she's supposed to be. And in the process, she finds the love of her life. What's subversive about that? I mean, that's what you want to see. And, you know, I get emails all the time from women who have said, I like your characters. They're strong. Huh. And this is a good thing. And your books have gotten me through some bad times as sitting at the bedside of a loved one who's dying. It takes me out of that, but I see myself in these women, or I see what I could be in these women, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, Dina, about Jane Austen. I mean, if we're talking about romance novels, doesn't she fit into what we've been talking about?
She does, and I'm going to I have only ever read Pride and Prejudice, and that's just recently for a book
that's
club.
Okay.
But yes, she is definitely a comedy of manners, and she gets the guy at the end, and she gets the guy by being herself. She's not changing for him. He's coming to appreciate her for who she is and realizing that this is what he wants. So yes, that is really the prototypical romance.
Grace, I have an email for you from someone named Bonnie. She says, I'm a huge fan of Grace Burroughs, and one thing I don't think I've ever heard answered is how her connections in her other career as a lawyer react to her writing career.
Okay, I can answer that. But first of all, I want to say that I disagree with Dina about Jane Austen and okay. Pride and Prejudice.
Okay.
And she wasn't writing romance. And blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
For the record, Your Honor.
There's the lawyer talking.
Yeah, is a good place to see a lot of never happilies. A lot of cases where, because I do child welfare law, you will struggle and struggle and devote many, many resources to a family. And there is no guarantee that family is going to be better off 5 years from now.
Right.
So this has given me an appetite for the happily ever after. I need a place in my life where I can make things right, because the courtroom is not always that place. So I'd say the impetus for writing comes from needing relief from the courtroom.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, I think all writers do this, but Grace, I mean, you write for yourself.
Well, I know I love to write, and I am happy when I'm writing. And I have to protect that.
Mariah, you said that you have a book coming out later this year. I'm just curious about your writing process, how you spend your day.
I would love to say that I get up chipper at 6 in the morning and sit down and write until noon, have a very light lunch, and go back to writing. But I'd be lying. I don't know that I really have a process. I don't outline. I think Grace had said earlier in the conversation that she knows that they're going to be, her couple will be together at the end, but she doesn't know how they're going to get there. I never know how they're going to get there. Mm-hmm. I just sort of let the characters guide me through the story and hope I get to where I should be by the end of 100,000 words or so.
You have to steal time for yourself, though, to do that.
Well, I work at home, and this is my full-time job. So I do try to get into my office here early, because my mind is better in the morning. By late afternoon, I want a nap.
Don't we all? Let me get, looks like Bob from Newtown to join us. Hi, Bob. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I was interested. I don't read romance novels, but I was thinking that I would maybe read 10 or 15 of them and kind of try to understand women better. If I did that, if I read 10 or 15 of these romance novels, since I assume women are largely the buyers of these,
right,
what would I learn about women? What does it say about women?
Oh, that's a great question, Bob. I really appreciate that. I'm looking at Dina. Can we learn about women, what women really think, what they want by reading romance novels?
I think you can learn about what women want. These of course, are everyone in these novels are idealized in some way. So they can feel so real. They really can. And you're going to learn that, you know, women are three-dimensional, well-rounded characters with doubts and internal demons and the same things. Basically, it's the same as a guy. You know, I don't think that you're going to realize that we're very different. We might bond over different things. You know, it might be, you know, a pint of ice cream as opposed to going out to the bar and having a beer. And that was a stereotype I just said.
That certainly was.
But I think that you learn that women are not that different. We have the same fears and hopes, and we want some of the same stuff in life.
Do you think, Grace, that a man reading some of your books could learn something about women they might not know?
That's tough. I hope that perhaps what would be revealed is an aspect of love that maybe wasn't as obvious in the male reader's awareness. Not about men, not about women, but about how we love
and about how love works in a relationship.
How about for you, Mariah?
Oh, I don't know. I think if you read 10 different novels by 10 different authors, you're going to get 10 different views of life. So maybe you'll only learn something about those 10 different authors. I don't know that you can you can generalize, you know, and extract something to utilize in your own life.
How about for you, Dina?
I would say go ahead and read them. You might start reading it because you want to learn something about women, but you might realize that these are really great books and really great stories. I know men who read them and love The Happy Ever After. They, just the way I do, it's nice to have something where you know things are fine at the end. And some of these stories are so good, so good. Just like any other genre.
Bob, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Dina, I was reading about e-readers, which are now so popular now, and that romance novels are really popular with e-readers. How come?
Oh, I think that the most basic reason why they're so popular is imagine sitting on a bus and reading a romance novel and everybody sees that you're reading it. And although we know that there shouldn't be a stigma against reading romance, there is. I hesitate carrying certain books. Like when I was younger, I actually had a cover I would put on my book so nobody could see what I was reading. So e-readers give you anonymity. You can read whatever you want and nobody is going to judge you on it.
Does that make sense to you, Grace?
I must be poorly socialized because I have never felt any need to apologize for what I'm reading, whether I am reading the Decameron or whether I am reading a Grace Burroughs novel. It's my business. But I also think that romance readers tend to be voracious readers. And for them, simply housing all of their paperback novels becomes an issue. The e-reader solves that.
Well, and do you feel...
And you can kind of
Go ahead, Grace.
You can have 1,500 books in your backpack, and that's a marvelous thing.
It is. But do you feel, Mariah, because these are voracious readers, that you have to sort of keep up with your readers' appetites, that they just keep wanting more and more and more?
Yes, and it can get tough because you can only write so many words in a day, and you can only publish so many books in a year. But yeah, especially when you write a series, readers want the next book in the series right away. I've noticed, like on my Facebook page, for example, after I publish a book, I'll have a lot of people come on and comment and say, "Is the next one ready now? When will we get the next one?" And I'm still dealing with the effects of the release of the first one. So yeah, people want to read them, but. I think as far as the e-books are concerned, I know a lot of people who do read a great deal and who find that the portability of the e-reader, they can take it on vacation, they can slip it in their purse, and they're not carrying something cumbersome. So,
Brian, I'm looking at some of your series. You have the Dead series, Dead Wrong, Dead Certain, Dead Even, Dead End, the Truth series, Cold Truth, Hard Truth, Dark Truth, Final Truth, Last Series, Last Look, Last Words, Last Breath. How important are titles?
I think readers do like to see a commonality in within a series because it helps them to recognize that this is part of whatever series, but all of those books you mentioned were romantic suspense. And I think those were all part of this FBI series that I had written. And when readers saw the connected titles, they knew that this was part of whatever unit, whatever series I was writing about.
Well, we are talking about romance novels in this hour of Radio Times. It is Valentine's Day. Seems like the right day to have this conversation. That's Mariah Stewart, also with us, Grace Burroughs, and Dina Halick, who's with the Free Library of Philadelphia. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Dina, let me go back to you. And we haven't really talked about some of the time travel romance novels. I mean, this really... gets out there, and I was mentioning to you before going on the air about Amish romance novels, and you have found a very interesting sub genre.
I did. I don't know anything about this book, but it's vampire Amish in space. So if there is a niche, somebody will fill it.
But is this a very niche market? I mean,
Amish ones?
Well, no, I'm just thinking romance writing.
I don't know. I think if you've got, you know, 1. Whatever billion in sales, you can't consider that a niche. That is a majority.
That's a force.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, there are subgenres that can be very niche. But even so many of these subgenres are huge. But yes, Amish is a subgenre of inspirational, which is huge. And there's paranormal, but then there's the vampires, there's the werewolves, there's the were-other things. There's been in the news the dinosaur erotica. And you're like, reads that? But people read it, and there's a market for it.
Well, Grace, are you going to stay in the 19th century, England and Scotland, in your writing?
I would say I will stay historical for the bulk of my writing. However, a contemporary trilogy is coming out next year. It has my name on it, so I must have written it. I'll be curious to see how that's received and if my historical readers will follow me into contemporary.
Yeah. Just curious, what got you to think about more contemporary-based stories?
I have a master's degree in conflict resolution, and my advisor said to me, what would you like to do for your final project, for your master's thesis? And I said, I would like to write a novel that evaluates the American system of justice as a conflict management system. And I'll have, you know, a hero that thinks it's wonderful and a heroine that hates it, and they'll have to resolve all their differences, and I'll get to make all my, sort of pot shots and arguments and defenses. And we didn't get a whole lot about the American system of justice in the book.
I gotcha. Well, you know what? We have to end on that note, and I want to thank the three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Dina Halick, Grace Burroughs, and Mariah Stewart. We want to close things out. A song for Valentine's Day and for romance novels. Dinah Washington performing I Could Write a Book.
Now if they ask me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met, so the world would never forget. And the simple secret of the plot, it's just to tell them that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers that as my book